Good morning. Here comes the KBOO News for Monday, May 25th, 2006. I'm Angela Hancock-Revis.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Mexican President Vicente Fox will meet with Seattle business leader today. The Senate will take a final vote today on a controversial immigration bill. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said today that he will call a national referendum on unilaterally accepting a Palestinian state with or without Hamas. Portland area weather today, chance of showers in the morning, turning to rain in the afternoon, highs 55 to 60. Tonight, showers likely, lows 45 to 50.
In a speech in downtown Seattle yesterday, Mexican President Vicente Fox said U.S. immigration reform should allow earned citizenship and a robust guest worker program along with secure borders. Governor Chris Gregoire agreed. Gregoire called Washington State a great state and said the United States was built by immigrants and continues to be built by immigrants today. Fox told attendees that Mexico does not support undocumented migration and that his country must expand economic growth, so it's not necessary for people to seek work and benefits outside the country. Fox said Mexico believes that it will take more than just enforcement building walls to really solve the challenge posed by the immigration phenomenon. He said comprehensive reform is in the interest of both the United States and Mexico. Fox flew from Utah to Yakima to visit a Latino-owned fruit orchard in the nation's leading apple-producing state.
Nearly 18 months after Portland approved what's commonly called the sit-lie ordinance, nearly everyone involved in its creation and application agree that it hasn't worked. At the same time, they agree the city needs something to keep vagrants, drunks, and aggressive panhandlers off the sidewalks of the central city and other business districts. Although the law will expire next month, Mayor Tom Potter is recommending extending it for 6 months and creating a special study committee to come up with an alternative. He has the support of the Portland Business Alliance, police, neighborhood activists, and advocates for the poor, mentally ill, and homeless. The most obvious solution would be to a tougher sit-lie ordinance. You can get people off the streets, advocates say, if they have nowhere to go. Right now, most city shelters and missions turn people out at 7 a.m. Regulating who can loiter presents legal hurdles. A judge ruled that Portland's original sidewalk ordinance, which forbade anyone from blocking any portion of any sidewalk, was unconstitutionally overbroad in 2004 after police used to arrest war protesters. This spring, the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the cities that have more homeless people than shelter beds cannot enforce laws. I cannot enforce laws barring sitting, lying, or sleeping on public streets and sidewalks. This from the Oregonian.
Mayor Tom Potter has filed a complaint with the FBI against an agent who invited a city employee to pass information to the agency. Potter called it a recruiting attempt that raises questions about how far the government is willing to go to spy on its citizens. Potter said, "There are things going on in terms of collecting information on citizens here in the United States that I think should be of concern to every citizen." Potter accused the FBI of a Big Brother tactic that exceeds what their responsibility and authority is in this area. The FBI, however, contended there was no attempt at recruitment. Dan Nielsen, the FBI's acting special agent in charge for Oregon, said the agent made no secret about who he was, and when the city employee was clearly uncomfortable about the situation, he told her she was free to report the contact. Asked if that amounted to recruiting, Nielsen replied, quote, "I don't think so. I think that it's making yourself accessible," unquote. Legal experts said it would be highly unusual for the FBI to try to recruit someone outside of a specific investigation.
Feral cats and rabid mutts are still welcome at Multnomah County Animal Shelter. But as of last week, an animal rights activist who has watchdogged the agency for a decade no longer can cross the threshold. The county formally barred Gail O'Connell Babcock from the animal facility. Friday's action came 3 months after an Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Division report suggested the county remedy a hostile work environment that employees attributed to O'Connell Babcock's frequent presence. The document banning her for 1 year cites O'Connell Babcock for abusive or threatening behavior, unreasonably noisy and or disruptive behavior, and for interfering with county business. The Multnomah County Sheriff's Office issued the exclusion order and is responsible for security at county buildings.
In Clark County, Washington, a commercial project that some neighbors fear will be a two-story Walmart store was challenged on Tuesday by the Fairgrounds Neighborhood Association. The appeal charges that the tenant is Walmart, but that information has not been disclosed in violation of state law. The application, listed as Salmon Creek Commercial Center, includes a 176,000-square-foot discount retail commercial building. The applicant is CLC Associates of Spokane Valley. Owner of the land is RB Northwest Properties of Lake Oswego. Attorney John Karpinski filed the appeal to the Clark County Land Use Hearings Examiner and asked for a review of a list of alleged errors. The challenge says the county botched the case's time limit for filing the decision and window for appeals, failed to say an appeal could be filed, and violated a traffic-related building moratorium ordered by county commissioners. The appeal also questions a traffic engineering report and says a road modification was improper. This from the Oregonian.
According to Reuters, PPM Energy, a unit of Utility Scottish Power, said yesterday that it will build a 100-megawatt wind power project near Arlington, Oregon. PPM, which is based in Portland, Oregon, said the project is expected to be in operation later this year and will generate electricity for more than 30,000 homes. The project will use 67 General Electric turbines. PPM is in discussions with an unidentified customer for full output from the operation, it said in a release. PPM has more than 1,700 megawatts of wind power in operation or under construction, including a project near the Arlington site.
Only 33% of Oregon 8th graders can fully explain how to tell glasses of pure water and salt water apart without taking a sip from either one, an indication of how the state's middle schoolers are lagging on science curriculums. The state's 8th graders emerged as an area of concern in results released yesterday on the National Assessment of Education Progress Science Tests, commonly referred to as NAEP, and given to a sample group of students in nearly every state. The tests are considered the definitive way of pinpointing how a state's elementary and middle school students stack up nationwide. Oregon's 8th graders scored solidly above the national average of 147. But the state's 8th graders lost ground from 2000, while the percentage of students rated as proficient based on their test results also dropped by 2 points. The news about Oregon's 4th graders was better, consistent with the relatively high scores earned by elementary students on state tests, which seem invariably to flatline as students progress through the system.
A New York jury is deliberating the outcome of a trial of a Pakistani immigrant accused of plotting to blow up Herald Square. Rebecca Miles reports from New York City.
Closing arguments have concluded in the trial of 23-year-old Shauharwar Martin Siraj. The Pakistani immigrant is charged with conspiracy to bomb Herald Square subway, a dense shopping district in Manhattan. Siraj was arrested on the eve of the Republican National Convention in 2004. The defense has argued an undercover informant paid by the NYPD used techniques of entrapment to involve Siraj in a conspiracy. The jury learned that the Egyptian-born police informant made friends with the accused and secretly recorded more than 30 hours of conversations. The defense attorney has argued the U.S. government manufactured the crime, explaining the informant ingratiated himself with the young man and inflamed his political passions with pictures from Abu Ghraib and talk of abuse of Muslims in America and in the Middle East. The prosecution has argued that while everyone is entitled to their political opinions, talk of placing a bomb in a crowded subway system does not qualify as protected free speech. If convicted of conspiracy, Siraj could face 20 years in prison. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting from New York.
The United States Senate has voted to limit debate on a sweeping overhaul of immigration law, clearing the way for the bill to be passed this week. Senators voted 73-25 to advance the measure, which covers border security and plans to give undocumented immigrants the chance to gain U.S. citizenship. The move heralds tough negotiations with the House of Representatives, which has passed stricter measures. Senator Edward Kennedy called the vote an overwhelming show of force to move forward on our common sense and comprehensive plan for immigration reform. President Bush, who backs an approach similar to the Senate bill, has repeatedly called on Congress to approve immigration reform. But there is widespread resistance, with the issue dividing both Republicans and Democrats. The Senate bill combines tougher border security with ways of allowing some undocumented immigrants to seek citizenship and provisions for guest worker programs. The final Senate vote takes place today.
The first wave about 800 National Guard soldiers will head to the U.S.-Mexico border as early as next week, including planners and leadership personnel who will stay longer than the planned 21-day missions. 200 soldiers are preparing to go to each of the four border states, California, Texas, Arizona, and New Mexico, around June 1st. The initial troops will be part of a long-term force of project managers who will stay on the job over time to provide continuity in the new border program. It was not clear whether the initial influx of Guard members would come from the four border states or from other units across the country. Bloom said the Guard troops will be deployed longer than 3 weeks are volunteers.
According to Reuters, U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Robert Zoellick is considering leaving his post. U.S. officials said one possible factor was that he was not being promoted to Treasury Secretary. Newspapers reported that Zoellick was in talks about a job with Wall Street firms. Two U.S. officials told Reuters they understand that leaving state was under serious consideration by Zoellick, but an aide to Zoellick denied he was unhappy with the department. In his number two job at the State Department, Zoellick has overseen Darfur peace negotiations for the Bush administration and played a major role in managing U.S.-China ties. Asked if Zoellick was leaving the State Department, White House spokesman Tony Snow told reporters, "I don't know, you'll have to ask Bob." The Financial Times cited sources with ties to the White House as saying Zoellick had been in talks with securities firms, including Merrill Lynch, while the Wall Street Journal also mentioned Goldman Sachs. Zoellick, an experienced government official, ran his own shop as U.S. Trade Representative, a cabinet-level position in Bush's first administration. This according to Reuters.
It isn't just Veterans Affairs. Personal information about Americans isn't safeguarded properly throughout the government, and the consequences could be disastrous, congressional investigators say. The potential damage was shown this week in the disclosure that personal data on more than 26 million veterans was stolen. Veterans Affairs was one of the eight departments given failing grades for computer security practices in 2005. The Pentagon and the Department of Homeland Security, State, Energy, and Health and Human Services also got F's from the House Committee on Government Reform in its annual report card released in March. A law passed in 2002 requires government agencies to make sure the information they got and their contractors handle is secure. Agencies must evaluate their technology and systems, train employees, and put procedures in place to protect information and to respond if security is breached. As the Veterans Affairs theft reveals, data security has much to do with procedures, such as who gets access to data and what they do with it, as it is with hack-proof computer systems.
In rare election year harmony, House Republican and Democratic leaders jointly demanded yesterday that the FBI return documents taken in a Capitol Hill raid that has quickly grown into a constitutional turf fight beyond party politics. House Speaker Dennis Hastert and Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi said in a statement, "The Justice Department must immediately return the papers it unconstitutionally seized." After that, they said, Democratic Representative William Jefferson of Louisiana must cooperate with the Justice Department's bribery investigation against him. The leaders also said the Justice Department should not look at the documents or give them to investigators in the Jefferson case. The developments capped a day of escalating charges, demands, and behind-the-scenes talks between House leaders and the Justice Department that ended with no resolution. House officials were drafting a joint resolution frowning on the raid, and Judiciary Committee Chairman James Sensenbrenner announced a hearing next week titled "Reckless Justice: Did the Saturday Night Raid of Congress Trample the Constitution?"
The Justice Department denied a news report yesterday that it was investigating House Speaker Denise Hastert. Dennis Hastert. Thank you. The statement by department spokeswoman Tasia Skolinos came in response to a report by ABC News that Hastert was under investigation by the FBI to determine his role in a public corruption probe centered around convicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. Amid a furor surrounding the weekend FBI raid on the offices of Republican William Jefferson, ABC quoted federal officials as saying information implicating Hastert was developed from convicted lobbyists now cooperating with the government. Hastert sharply criticized the raid, and the House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi demanded that Justice Department officials return all the documents seized from Jefferson's office. Asked if he has been, if he has, was being, was being investigated, Hastert said late Wednesday that he has not received any notice from the Justice Department that he was being investigated as part of the Jack Abramoff probe. Hastert's office later issued a statement calling the ABC report absolutely untrue and demanding a full retraction. ABC has had no immediate comment.
Vice President Cheney could be called to testify in the perjury case against his former chief of staff. In a court filing yesterday, special counsel Patrick Fitzgerald suggested Cheney would be a logical government witness because he could authenticate notes he jotted on a New York Times op-ed article by former U.S. Ambassador Joseph Wilson. Wilson was highly critical of the Bush administration's rationale for attacking Iraq. And a civil rights group has filed complaints in more than 20 states over allegations that phone companies shared customer records with the government's biggest spy agency. The American Civil Liberties Union believes the phone program was the latest example of a longer-term abuse of power by the executive branch. The ACLU filed complaints with state utility commissions and attorneys general and demanded the Federal Communications Commission look into the matter. The group also placed full-page ads in 8 large city newspapers asking the public to join the complaints, saying in bold type, AT&T, Verizon, and other phone companies may have illegally sent your phone record to the National Security Agency. The head of the ACLU said that the organization sought to pressure the FCC and its chairman, Kevin Martin, to investigate the telephone records program, even though Martin has said the agency does not have the power to review classified information.
Demonstrators would be barred from disrupting military funerals at national cemeteries under legislation approved by the Senate yesterday. The measure, which passed the House in nearly identical form 2 weeks ago, specifically targets a Kansas church group that has staged protests at military funerals around the country, claiming that the deaths were a sign of God's anger at U.S. tolerance of homosexuals. Under the Senate bill, approved without objection with no recorded vote, the Respect for America's Fallen Heroes Act would bar protests within 300 feet of the entrance of cemeteries and within 100 feet of a road into the cemetery from 60 minutes before to 60 minutes after a funeral. Those violating the act would face up to $100,000 fine and up to a year in prison. The sponsor of the House bill, Representative Mike Rogers, said he took up the issue after attending a military funeral in his home state, where mourners were greeted by chants and taunting, and some of the most vile things I had ever heard. The demonstrators are led by the Reverend Fred Phelps of Topeka, Kansas, who has previously organized protests against those who died of AIDS and gay murder victim Matthew Shepard.
A recent nationwide survey shows that it's no longer just radical environmentalists who think global warming is real. About half of America's hunters and anglers, including many who said they voted for President Bush in 2004, told pollsters they are witnessing firsthand in the outdoors the effects of some form of climate change. The sportsmen are seeing climate changes in the form of lakes that no longer freeze over for ice fishing in winter, fall hunting seasons without enough snow to track deer, and other drastic environmental changes they consider a threat to wildlife. Of those who say they have seen such changes, the majority attribute those changes to global warming, and many go a step further to blame the burning of fossil fuels as the cause of the warming. This from the New Mexican.
U.S. Army Major General Jeffrey Miller, the highest-ranking officer to testify in the Abu Ghraib prison scandal, said yesterday that he never suggested using military dogs in interrogations of Iraqi prisoners. Miller was called to testify as a defense witness by a military police dog handler charged with using his dog to abuse prisoners at the jail outside Baghdad. One of a number of low-ranking troops prosecuted for ill treatment of prison inmates. But Miller's testimony appeared to undercut the defense of Sergeant Santos Cardona, 32, of Fullerton, California, who argues he was acting with the consent of superior officers. He is charged with dereliction of duty and assaulting and threatening Iraqi detainees with his Belgian Shepherd. Miller had avoided testifying in previous Abu Ghraib abuse trials, but his retirement has been held up until he clears up outstanding legal matters, this according to Reuters.
In Chile, four Mapuche Indians sentenced to 10 years in prison in order to pay nearly $900,000 for an arson campaign are on a hunger strike once again. This comes shortly after ending a hunger strike of more than 60 days. In Santiago, FSRN's Jorge Garatón has the story.
Senators who broker a legislative agreement with the government that would allow the four Mapuches to serve their sentences at a halfway house say the new hunger strike endangers the legislation that would benefit them. This weekend, the Mapuches took up their hunger strike for the second time after a parliamentary commission studying the bill recessed for 30 days. The previous hunger strike ended when Congress agreed to consider emergency legislation that would allow the Mapuches to serve their sentences at a halfway house. The Mapuches say they're innocent. They were tried under a Pinochet-era anti-terrorism act for the forest fires set in lands historically controlled by the Mapuches. But today, the government says the emergency legislation period expired as Congress is on recess until June 6. It is not clear what will happen to the hunger strike and the emergency legislation. A Catholic bishop who helped broker the deal walked away from the agreement today. For FSRN, this is Jorge Garretón in Santiago.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said today he will call a national referendum on accepting a Palestinian state alongside Israel if Hamas doesn't agree to the idea within 10 days. Abbas's ultimatum to Hamas was a political gamble that could either help resolve the Palestinians' internal deadlock or lead them into a deeper crisis. Senior Hamas officials said they accepted the idea of a referendum. Such a vote would ask Palestinians to give implicit recognition to Israel. It could provide the hardline group cover and allow it to moderate without losing face. Palestinian analysis believes such a proposal would pass. Abbas's proposal came as Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert returned from a trip to Washington, where he presented President Bush with a West Bank pullout plan. If there is no breakthrough in long-stalled peace efforts in the coming months, Israel would withdraw from much of the West Bank, solidify its control of large settlement blocks, and unilaterally draw its border with the Palestinians. The Palestinians reject Olmert's unilateral plan, and Abbas's announcement today appeared part of a hurried effort to show the world there is a willing Palestinian partner for negotiations with Israel.
In a move that is raising hackles in Moscow, the U.S. is proposing to install an anti-missile defense system in Central Europe to counter any future attack from a nuclear-armed Iran. The plan, for which the Pentagon has requested $56 million of exploratory funding from Congress, would ultimately cost $1.6 billion and involve 10 interceptor units. The most likely base for the system is in Poland, followed by the Czech Republic. The scheme would parallel the anti-missile shield under construction in Alaska and California against attacks from North Korea. Iran currently has no weapons capable of hitting Western Europe, let alone an intercontinental missile that could strike the United States. But as the showdown moves closer between the West and Tehran over its uranium enrichment program, the new shield would bring a direct U.S. military presence deeper into Europe. For Russia, the project reeks of American encroachment into what used to be its own sphere of influence. The Russian defense minister said the move would have a negative impact on the whole Euro-Atlantic security system. This according to the New York Times.
The armed groups operating across Iraq include not just the 145,000 officially sanctioned police officers and commandos who have come under scrutiny for widespread human rights violations. They also include thousands of armed guards and militia gunmen, some Shiite, some Sunni, some like the 145,000 member facilities. Facilities Protection Service operating with official backing. Some, like the Shiite-led Badr Brigade militia, conduct operations with the government's tacit approval, sometimes even wearing government uniforms. Some of these armed groups, like the Iraqi Army and the Iraqi Police, often carry out legitimate missions to combat crime and the insurgency. Others, like members of another Shiite militia, the Mahdi Army, specialize in torture, murder, kidnapping, and the settling of scores for political parties. Reining in Iraq's official and unofficial armies is the most urgent task confronting Iraq's new leaders. In speeches and private conversations, Prime Minister Nouri Kamal al-Maliki says he intends to clamp down on death squads operating within the Iraqi government and to disarm the militias that provide the street muscle for Iraq's political parties. That presages an enormous political battle, one that extends beyond the Interior Ministry's police officers and paramilitary soldiers. A larger and possibly more decisive struggle looms to disarm myriad other armed groups, including the Shiite militias, most of them unanswerable to Shiite political parties that dominate the new government. This from New York Times.
Talks on a package of incentives for Iran to give up its controversial nuclear program are reported to have made good progress in London. More discussions between permanent members of the UN Security Council and Germany were likely. Meanwhile, the US has rejected Iran's call for direct talks on the issue. This according to the BBC. White House spokesman Tony Snow said in Washington, quote, "We will continue to use appropriate international forums and work with and through our allies when it comes to dealing with the government in Iran." Israel's Prime Minister Ehud Olmert urged the U.S. to be tough on Iran's nuclear ambitions. This from the BBC.
International troops are heading to East Timor to try to quell the worst violence since the country's independence from Indonesia in 1999. Australia, New Zealand, and Portugal are sending troops after Foreign Minister José Ramos Horta said East Timor could not control the situation. Violence has increased between security forces and about 600 soldiers who were recently sacked. The U.S. and Australia have ordered all non-essential personnel to evacuate. Two people were killed and another five wounded in shootouts around the capital on Tuesday. Clashes continued on Wednesday with at least one personnel, a Marine officer, injured. Australian Acting Prime Minister Peter Costello said Canberra's official would arrive in Dili today to discuss deployment. The unrest began with the splintering of the armed forces in March. The violence escalated, and that month, five people were killed. Many buildings were destroyed, and tens of thousands of people fled Dili, fearing further unrest. This from the BBC.
A year after the normally docile creatures attacked seven people on a university campus in Illinois, deer have struck again. Three people were attacked by deer within minutes of each other on a footpath at Southern Illinois University. A doe probably was responsible for all three attacks. One worker needed stitches for a gash on his forehead. Another suffered cuts, bruises, and a sprained wrist. And a student was left with a scratched jaw. Two of the victims sought medical treatment. This week's incidents came earlier in fawning season than last year's attacks, which officials attributed to a combination of protective motherly instinct, squeezed habitat, and in some cases, people trying to approach fawns. There was no indication that any of the victims had provoked the deer. And this has been the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, May 25th, 2006. Chris Andre edited the news. KBOO volunteers edited the tape stories. And Boone Revis is on the board right now. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Angela Hancock Revis.
Portland area weather today. Chance of showers in the morning, turning to rain in the afternoon. Highs 55 to 60 tonight. Showers likely, lows 45 to 50. Thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Be sure to join us for the KABU Evening News at 5 p.m. and volunteer in the KABU AM Newsroom. Call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, to find out how you can get involved. Or visit our website at www.kboo.fm. Coming up this morning on KABU.